Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the podcast, episode 80 for April 1st, 2010. The Breast Culling of 2010. This podcast is brought to you by GoToAssist. For your free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Ally. All right, it's time for the podcast, and I'm the host, Michael Johnston, and we don't have a name for the podcast yet, but we're still thinking on it. We're here to talk about the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod Touch, the App Store, and anything else we decide to talk about, because that's just how we roll. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, it's always great to be here on the podcast whose name we dare not speak.
Yeah. And Adam Christensen's here. Yep, from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
I'm just thinking that, you know, all these things that we talk about start with IP.
Mm-hmm. So you want to do, like, I cup, but spelled out?
I have no idea. It was an interesting observation.
It could be the IPCast. You know, I... No.
IP?
That doesn't work. Yeah, that just doesn't work. Never mind.
The IPCast.
The IP thingy.
Well, you know, that would work, but, you know, we might end up with a different demographic, you know, like urologists.
Exactly.
All right. So, like I mentioned briefly, we're working on a new name. We've been the iPhone LA podcast. Then we went to, what was it, This Week in iPhone for, I think, one episode. And then we decided that that sounds too much like other podcasts out on the internet. So we're searching for a new name. I threw out iPhone Chatcast last week. I got a lot of feedback from the listeners.
Did you get the same kind of feedback I got?
Well, I got one piece of feedback regarding swearing again. Actually, I got a lot of swearing because we're also thinking about making the show explicit because, you know, that's almost the nature of the show anyway. I just... used to claim that I took it out. So I think I've decided that it's going to be an explicit show, but not
Wait,
to the
did
extent.
Did we say bad words last week?
No, Adam did.
And it was so cute because you wouldn't expect that from Adam.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, so we're not going to go crazy with it. But if it happens, you know, so what? It happens.
So were people offended by Adam's F-bomb?
No, everybody enjoyed it.
Oh, okay.
Everybody enjoyed it. I got an email in particular from @not_ratchet, _ratchet.
Hey, hi.
Do you know her?
Yeah.
Him, her? Who is it?
Her.
Her. She says, I advocate continued profanity on your show. That is all.
Yeah, well, I got an email like that too from Darren, the Mad Professor.
Oh, cool!
Did I forward that to you? He had a bunch of name suggestions, by the way.
Maybe. What do you have those names off?
Offhand? They're right here. Yeah.
Okay, go.
The iPhone Banana Cast.
Okay, maybe.
the
I like that iPhone Banana, and then like a bunch of like @ signs and like ampersands and percents and dollar signs right after that.
Yeah, he said the F-bomb cast, the what's in my pocket cast my pad, and banana cast, just banana cast, which he said, I don't get this joke, but you know, he says maybe popular with the gay community. I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure what that means either.
And wait, then just banana cast.
Banana cast, okay.
I don't know. Hopefully it's not insulting.
Apple Mobile Podcast is what I one of the suggestions. iMobile Cast, iPhone OS Weekly, Jeff's Pants Cast.
that would be good. I have to give Darren's actual real suggestion was similar to some of those. It was just My Mobile Cast.
My Mobile Cast?
Yeah.
See, I definitely understand the want to include everything instead of just saying iPhone, because we really just talk about all these mobile OS, Apple mobile OS devices. But I like having the word iPhone in there. So I don't know. I also like the one that you threw out last week, Adam. You said we have communicators. Is that what you said?
Something like that, yeah.
I like that idea because I like the idea of of the future and having future devices in our hands. Because I always feel like I'm in Star Trek when I look at my phone. Not always. Sometimes I'm angry at it. But yeah.
So sometimes you're a Klingon.
The cool glossy shit with Apple logo cast?
Yeah, that works. That's also that also encompasses everything. So yeah, that's it. If you have any,
have you considered calling it iProng?
Yeah, that name's free. I think that's available. That's up for grabs. And call back to the obligatory call back to Bill Palmer. And
I kind of like what you did at the top of the show, which is just welcome to the podcast.
This is the podcast, and we're doing the stuff.
It could just be the. Does anybody have that, the podcast?
Probably.
We could just claim that as ours.
I'm not sure.
Doing a quick Google search.
Yeah. Okay. So if you have any suggestions about the show names or swearing, we're pretty decided on that at this point. But show names, you can send an email to podcast@iphonela.com and we'll take a look at those. And yeah, if we get something good, then we'll choose it and we'll talk about it. We'll at least maybe talk about it if I feel like it. And with that,
if you feel like it.
Well, that's how it goes. And Jeff, I think you need to get up on your mic a little more, or maybe turn a knob or something.
Okay, so here I am trying to help out.
There it is. Whoa. With a name. There it is.
I turned my head away because the what is that? iTunes. Oh, yeah. I really.
Yeah. Speaking of iTunes. There's a new version of iTunes.
Let me finish. Okay. iTunes. I went into iTunes to the iTunes store to see if there was a podcast called The Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I haven't found one called The Podcast.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of NPR BS.
There's a lot of NPR stuff in there. Something with a soccer ball. Some Bill Maher thing. Oh, Happy Tree Friends shows up when you do that. Have you seen that? Isn't that just like incredible fun? Happy Tree Friends.
You can put that on your iPhone.
There you go.
You can go to the iTunes store on your iPhone and look at the Happy Tree Friends. There's a 20 megabyte download limit though if you're not on Wi-Fi. Just trying to tie it back into the iPhone so people don't get upset.
Oh right, iPhone.
That's fine. Okay, so there's a new version of iTunes out, iTunes 9.1. Right? 9.1? I thought it was 9.2 for a minute and as I was writing it. But 9.1, it has some tweaks and iPad support. And you can move Genius Mixes around, which really bugged me. The fact that you couldn't do a thing with the Genius Mixes previously. You can rearrange them. You can delete them. You can rename them. And the Applications tab was renamed to Apps and Books. Now includes ebooks, so you can lump all those together into iTunes. I think that maybe Apple should, you know how Google is releasing a computer operating system based on Chrome? I think that Apple could introduce an operating system based on iTunes at this point because it just has everything in there.
Are you drunk?
It would be a really, really bad operating system. It would suck. I know about that, but...
Well, the whole thing with Google introducing a Chrome-based OS is completely daft. And by the way, that's special in there just for UK listeners. Completely daft. Totally mental, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, trying to cram everything into a web browser, which is essentially what the Chrome OS is. It's a web browser shell on top of everything else. Okay, how much do you do every day in a web browser where you feel confident that the web browser is going to continue to function properly for you?
Never. I never feel that way. That's why I use Gmail, and that's part of the reason why I have another application to run just Gmail, because I know that Safari is going to crash. It's just a matter of when.
Right. So now picture trying to run your whole operating system in what is essentially a web browser shell, running web-based applications for everything you do. That's just a bucket of pain waiting to happen.
That's true. Does it have multitasking?
Does it matter?
No, but it does. I mean, for the transition I'm trying to make. to reel it back in already.
Oh, wait, I've got it. I don't know if it does, but wouldn't it be cool if Apple was getting ready to do something with their mobile products that included multitasking?
Oh, wow. Tell me more.
Well, golly, gee, I've heard this rumor that iPhone OS 4.0 is going to include an feature that works sort of like Expose does on Mac OS X that allows you to jump between applications.
Wow.
And would, in essence, give you that multitasking we've been asking for.
Wow, I've heard a similar rumor. Actually, I heard that same rumor. Not similar. The same rumor.
You guys are moving on without me.
Catch up.
I had a question about the iTunes thing.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had a chance to play with it very much.
Sure.
But so I can throw an EPUB book into iTunes, right?
Yep.
And it shows up in the book section.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't do anything with it.
You can sync it to your iPad.
Yeah, from what
but
I understand,
right now I can't. Like,
where's your iPad, Adam?
Open it. Well, can you link iTunes on the Mac to an EPUB reader or something like that, like Stanza or something? I haven't tried that. But.
Have you tried putting a book in there and then double clicking it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I did,
and
so I have a book
anything.
In there. Like, I went to Project Gutenberg, got Alice in Wonderland, threw it in there. It's cool because it shows up in the books section, separate
yeah.
from the audiobooks section. But it's just got a little generic book icon, and that's kind of about it. So that's exciting, but...
Oh, wow. I just realized I have two audiobooks that I completely forgot I had. And this is the first time I've clicked on books on iTunes, and both of my audiobooks are showing up.
That's fun.
Huh. It's like a little holiday cheer right in the middle of the show for me.
I think you also have a hard drive plugged in, just by the way, because I can hear it.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine. I just decided that we would remove the, what is it called, breaking the fourth wall. And now I'm just mentioning that you have some issues with your audio. Well, that's for the benefit of the listeners.
Well, the good news is I can actually do something about that.
That is good.
There, is that better?
Oh, that's fantastic. You sound wonderful.
That was actually my Time Machine hard drive doing its own thing. I'm thinking of renaming it from, I think I called it Wayback Machine. I think I'm going to rename it to something like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang because it's so fracking loud.
I like that.
And my desk is actually glass, so it just takes all those vibrations and sends them right into my microphone and right out to the whole world to hear. So sorry, everyone.
It's cool.
Okay, so... Back to this ebook thingy. The other complaint I have, and I was hoping this was going to get fixed with when Apple started supporting books, is PDFs. You can put, I don't know if many people know this, but you can put PDFs on iTunes, right? You could subscribe to PDF podcasts, like Beat Week Magazine is a PDF that's distributed as a feed. You can subscribe in iTunes, and what gets downloaded is a PDF. And there it goes into the podcast section, but if you just drag a PDF from your desktop into iTunes, it goes into the music section. Shouldn't that go into like the books section?
Yes.
Actually, it should. I understand it going into music before. Because
right.
Because until this update came out, yesterday, there was no other place for PDFs. But yeah, they should go into the books section now.
Well, and typically too, that's how like album art or liner note, you know, booklets were distributed. Right, so it kind of went in there with your music.
Oh, right.
But it seems
right.
like all that stuff should go into books. And if it's associated with an album, it'd be cool if there's some way to associate it as, you know, and the book section right now has, like I was just saying, it has a section for books versus audiobooks. It'd be great if you could do even like PDFs, books, audiobooks, and maybe a category for like, what do they call those things? CD booklets or music booklets or whatever you want to call them.
If you...
And why the heck isn't the PDF... why isn't Preview integrated into iTunes yet? Also, by the way, a PDF reader. Because it's really annoying to double-click the PDF and have it open in, you know, whole separate application.
Eh.
So, just my complaints.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you drag the...
Going to your point earlier, though, Michael, that you said, you know, iTunes could almost be its whole own operating system. And I would agree. Integrate the PDF reader right in there. Integrate an ebook reader right in iTunes. and it can be the All Things Media. You know, they need to rename it like iMedia.
They just need to rewrite it and have it not be lame. But that's
well, that's just me. It's suffering the same problem that the iTunes Store is suffering, right? The application is falling the same fate where it has to serve too many masters, and it was only ever originally designed to manage music, and now it's got to like manage everything.
That's true, and it was never intended to be a front end to a purchasing system.
Right. Yeah, it's time for a rewrite, a new app.
Yep. Okay. Moving on. Okay. So to the Amazon has announced that they're going to have an app ready for the iPad, a Kindle app ready, and it'll have Whisper Sync. So if you have a Kindle already, you can look at your books on there, read, go to a certain page, read one page, go to your iPad Kindle app and pick up right where you left off, which is really cool. And definitely the way that Amazon should go if they want to remain profitable with the iPad out there. You know, obviously in the Kindle space anyway. Of course it's Amazon, they're going to be fine. But it's good. I think that's definitely what they should be doing with regards to books.
You know, it'll do the Whisper Sync thing with your iPhone also.
Yeah.
So you can jump between any of the apps and or any of the devices, and it'll keep where you are in your books synchronized. And just so you know, I don't think the Kindle's going to die when the iPad comes out.
Yeah.
Because there's always going to be a market, I think, for people that are looking for a dedicated ebook reader. I mean, there's people out there that don't want the sophistication, technical sophistication that goes along with an iPad. All they want is something that has a crazy long battery life. They can read a book and that's it.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be a market for the Kindle for a long time, even though it's feature poor compared to the iPad.
I feel like the same people who would buy a Kindle a year ago are still going to buy the Kindle with the iPad out there for the most part, because it's such a niche thing with just what it's set up to be specifically a book reader. It has the e-ink screen, it has the battery life, and the mobile internet, right? Via Sprint or whatever.
Yes.
And by mobile internet, I mean the connectivity to the internet so you can buy books wherever you are.
It's 3G right. access.
Right.
Yes. Yes. It's 3G access, so you can get at your books, you can get at your RSS feeds. That's a paid service for the Kindle, isn't it? I should know that. I have a Kindle.
I think it's free, man. I think you get it included with your Kindle.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. So, yeah, you have that constant update feature in the Kindle that you don't get with an iPad that's releasing on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people that already own Kindles that are buying iPads. And, well, look, I'm doing it too. And I'm certain I will continue to use the Kindle for certain things.
Yeah, I bet. I got a chance to look at one at an airport because someone had one, and I was looking over their shoulder because I'm a creep. And the screen looks awesome. I could read it from, you know, with like an iPad or an iPhone, I guess it's much more difficult to see clearly what's being displayed on the screen. And with that e-ink screen, that looks great.
The e-ink screen is awesome. I wish I had a Kindle 2 instead of the original Kindle, because the form factor is much better, especially if you're left-handed. But man, that screen really is nice. If what you need is to read text and you have a light source because they're not backlit.
Yeah.
That e-ink screen on the Kindle is really hard to beat.
I agree. Moving on, the iTunes Store now has a Gift This App feature in the App Store, which is something that you could do with music and movies and TV shows and everything else except for applications. And now they have it, and I think it's great.
Because
there have been several occasions where I thought, hey, such and such or so and so's birthday is coming up, I'd love to buy them this awesome iPhone app that I really think they would enjoy and probably wouldn't buy on their own because it's expensive or something like that.
you know, I don't know how the sausage factory behind the iTunes store works.
It's a large sausage factory. There are many cooks in that factory.
Yeah, but I have to wonder, I mean, was the system set up in such a way that they couldn't just make that feature available before? I mean, did they have to go in and like recode a ton of stuff just to be able to do the gifting thing for applications?
You would think not, but I would not be surprised if that was the truth.
You know, as odd as it sounds, I'm going to throw this out there, and I don't know for sure or not, but just based on the fact that another thing about this is different types of these features that are on iTunes are either available or not available depending on your country. Like, I would doubt that Gift This App is available to every iTunes store. And typically it comes back to like weird like laws about how you can sell things. And I'm curious if iPhone apps fall under a different category than, say, some other thing, or if there's approvals so that have to get gone through, or at least lawyers that have to go check things before they can enable certain features.
That sounds absolutely ridiculous and incredibly hard to believe, which makes me think it's probably completely correct.
Probably correct.
You know, it's like lawyers running around going, you know, what about this and that? And, oh, we better check this statute. And, well, what about the taxes on this thing? And, you know, I don't know. It gets really complicated a lot of times when you start just looking at the minutia of selling online. Having done e-commerce stuff long enough to know that it gets really bizarre, especially when you start looking at things like sales tax and on digital things, because in some states, I'm sure software falls under a different category than music when it comes to digitally distributed material and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it could have taken them a long time to figure all that out. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility.
I'd still like to go with the story that Apple just had to recode a whole bunch of stuff. Just because it sounds difficult and like some kind of system they have set up right now for iTunes. Just because I'm hating on iTunes, I'll stick with that theme.
You know, that's completely possible as well. Okay, we know you're hating on iTunes, but the whole thing with having to code this stuff. I mean, look at the way the online Apple Store works. When Apple wants to update a product, they actually have to take their store offline.
Which is entertaining and makes for a lot of excitement.
It does. But it makes me wonder, do they really have to hand code all this crap in there?
I think, well, they do hand code their the product pages. I'm not sure about the store. I think they have their own custom little CMS that for some reason they have to take down to actually...
Someone needs to introduce these people.
You know, it's possible that they're just taking it down to in order to make the changes and then make sure and go over everything and make sure everything looks good. Make sure it's all correct and there aren't any big oopsies.
That's what a beta site's for. I mean, there's no reason why you can't run a concurrent site and then make changes on one, make sure nothing breaks, and then you flip the switch and it just rolls over and becomes the live site. I mean, that's something that I deal with on a weekly basis, and it's working flawlessly. And if that's something that we can do at TMO without making people's eyes bleed, okay, why can't Apple do that?
Who knows?
Man, we're like totally bagging on Apple's underlying infrastructure.
I don't know why why we haven't gotten any suggestions about the Apple hater cast or something, because I feel like that's all we do.
Oh no, some days it's a total love fest.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, some people sometimes we get a lot of email and people say, why do you think that this is good, or they're concerned about our sanity when we get really happy about something.
They should be concerned about our sanity just in general.
Yeah, I am.
Likely true. We're ADD, especially on this episode. Yeah. And I'm going to keep it going because did we finish the multitasking thing?
I don't think we finished that.
I think I got us off the rails and I need to bring us back to it because I don't think we gave the listeners a fair shake on the iPhone OO.
okay.
4-0 multitasking.
Sure. I will give my opinion first because you introduced it, and I will take it from you. So they say that the expose thing is going to be more like the command tab situation that we have on the Mac. So you do the you have the command tab and you just see the icons instead of actual window previews, which makes sense if they're going to be giving you a single view, like a grid view of all the applications. It would just show the icons instead of the like a preview of the window. But I'm, as you know, a big fan of the Palm Pre system, where it
right.
lets you swipe through. And I think, honestly, I feel like that's the best way to do it so far. And of course, Apple, I'm sure, will come out with some idea that's slightly different from that, and it'll be way, way better.
Interesting. You know, it's funny when you sent this link, and I kind of popped over to look at the piece on iPhone Alley, and then started thinking about it. You guys kind of have an image of just like the home screen with the little icons.
Yeah,
but, and I guess I pictured it working as you would double tap, and it would give you a screen of the little icons up to the number that fit on an iPhone screen, and then you could swipe back and forth through, and then, you know, maybe there was an indicator on the face of the icon, or better yet, I thought maybe what would happen if you tapped the icon and it sort of flipped around. You know how they have that flip around effect, almost like info on a widget. And it flipped around, and then it would show you what it was doing, like how much memory resources it was taking up, how much.
Maybe, and it did like a zoom effect, and you saw, maybe if you tapped on the icon, you could see the window, it would do a zoom effect in like a preview. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it would show kind of the resources it was using, so you could make it an informed decision. And then just with a little, quit this app button down at the bottom, or close, you know, so two little buttons, close or quit this app. So you could make a decision. You could look at it and go, oh, crud, this thing's eating up all my network resources, or this thing's eating up all my memory resources. I want to kill it. I want to quit it right from here.
I don't think Apple's going to do anything that involves showing you RAM consumption or CPU usage or anything like that.
But isn't that what you want to know?
That is definitely what I want to know. That's why I have a thing at the top of my iPhone that shows how much memory is being used, but not many people care or want to see that. And Apple certainly doesn't want to show people that.
Well, why not?
Because, you know, it's not pretty. Duh.
Really?
Yeah, Apple's all about the shiny and making it happy.
They have Activity Viewer, and that seems to be a pretty nice looking app.
Well, that's on the Mac. We're talking about the iPhone. The Mac also has multitasking, so.
I mean, why they can take, they like to steal design ideas. Just go over to iSlayer and like take iStat Pro and like make a little widgety interfacey thing that I flip it around, and that's what it shows me. A little nice little graph, nice little bar chart. I don't care, but something like that I think would work really well.
That would be nice, but I feel like Apple won't do that, and I feel like that's part of, you know, when Scott Forstall or Steve, one of them, mentioned multitasking at one of the keynotes. He said, you know, Windows users actually have to, or Windows mobile users have to go into the task manager and manually deal with that and all that stuff that you just, that's what they're trying to avoid.
I mean, if you're going to bother doing that, then why not just stick a stupid blue dot on the bottom corner of the icon as it's running, and you can just use the home screen to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, you can flip through and you can see anything with a blue dot is running, just like on Mac OS X.
They do that actually with the with Backgrounder. You can have that option right there. That's exactly how it's done.
I mean, if you're not going to give me any more information, why do I need a whole separate screen to see what background apps are running?
Yeah, who knows? Probably just, I feel like we're going to get screen previews, like actually see the full app, like a preview of the app. That'd be nice.
Sort of like what you get in mobile Safari.
Can I just have a Palm Pre? That's just
you can, but you won't be happy because it's going to.
I just vote for not enabling multitasking, but that's just me.
Okay. All right. Well, we should move on because we have a lot to cover. AT&T is going to be rolling out the 3G microcell nationally starting mid-April.
About this every week, this microcell.
I know, that's just why I wanted to stick it in there, because we talked about
it. So we can bash it again and say how stupid it is?
No, just so we can say that it's rolling out nationally in April, mid-April. That's what AT&T
says. I want to say how stupid it is.
Okay, Adam, how stupid is it?
I just still don't get the point of me paying AT&T to have a device to give me better coverage in my house
if you get
using my Wi-Fi network that I'm paying for. So I pay AT&T, and then I let them use my bandwidth. I still don't get it.
You think they're surfing porn using your internet?
No, I just think that they should almost be paying me to stick this thing in my house because I'm helping them build out their network to give me better service. So it's
you
sort
know,
of like
I'm with you, Adam.
Yeah, but carriers have never been fair.
You should have to pay for building
crappy
out
service. So the answer is you call them up, you say, you know what? My coverage, my AT&T coverage in my house sucks. And they go, oh, no problem. We have a solution for you. Give us
$100.
$150. $150. And then let us use you use up some of your bandwidth that you pay for each month. And you'll have good phone coverage.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's got this thing from Sprint because he has the same situation in his house. They actually gave him the box that does that for Sprint, but it only works when he dials out. It doesn't work on incoming calls. So I wonder if that's the same case with AT&T's thing, because that would be super lame. But there are discounts.
You know what is good about it, though, that I heard? It does include a free tube of lube.
I shouldn't laugh. I'm encouraging you.
Okay.
So I bet it'll be the same thing with AT&T's microcell boxes, that it doesn't work for incoming calls. I'm going to change what I'm saying. I think it wouldn't surprise me if it doesn't work for incoming calls until after the call is connected. So you get the call, you answer your phone, and then the box goes, hey, here I am. And then it switches you over to that immediately.
Yeah, which means if you don't have signal, then you're not going to get inbound calls.
That's a good point.
I hope not. You can get a discount if you sign up for AT&T Yahoo DSL from SBC, Ameritech, or whatever. Or if you sign up for UVerse, you get $50 off. And if you decide to pay $20 a month for this thing, they will give it to you for $100 off. The $20 a month thing allows you to make it's actually I don't know. I was going to say it's cool, but after I thought about it for half a second, it's kind of stupid. But you can have it. So if you're using the microcell thing, it mm-hmm. won't count toward your minutes. So if you're one of those people who would really benefit from paying $20 extra a month to not ding into your minutes package, then you can do that as well.
So if you don't have the 4,000 rollover minutes like I do,
if you're not one of those people, if you're one of those people who actually uses your phone as a phone,
your iPhone as a phone, who does that?
I don't know anybody who uses their iPhone as a phone.
I made a call on mine the other day.
Really? Was it like a minute long?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it dropped out.
Yeah, there is that part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let me call you back on Skype.
Because we all know how much more reliable Skype is. All right, so there's an iPhone 4G LCD digitizer display thing that supposedly leaked the other day. Apple.pro is claiming that they have received an iPhone 4G screen, so the glass in the digitizer and the screen. It's slightly longer than the current iPhone screen. Well, taller, I should say. And there's a little hole there. There's a hole near the earpiece, which I'm guessing would be for a camera if I didn't think this was totally fake.
Wait. So this wasn't from Mac Observer?
Nope.
Where's the source of this?
This is Apple.pro. It's a
then
repair
I
shop.
I totally believe it.
So as long as it wasn't from, like, as long as it wasn't something Jeff wrote, then you believe it.
Sorry, it had to be done.
No, they had the original iPhone 3G, the back casing for that. Like,
yes,
months
in
advance.
I'm just teasing. I'm teasing. I tease.
Okay.
Only because I love.
Yeah, it's true.
You're so sweet.
What do you guys think? You think this is fake? I think it's fake.
Fake.
Yeah.
Fake.
Yeah. But it is the second display that we've seen that is longer, slightly taller than the current iPhone screen. But I think it's coming from the same place, and these repair shops are
Didn't they do this same place last time?
No, there was a different, like a month ago, there was another repair shop. I think it was like ApplePeelsPro.com or something. I don't know.
Like
I'm making
Apple
up a name.
Glass.pro.
FakeiPhones.com.
Yeah, it's just a great way to get your advertising out there.
Yeah, I know. I'm sending my iPhone there right now to get repaired.
I want them to stretch mine. You know,
to stretch it.
Yeah, I want it to be long like that. Apple is not going to change the iPhone form factor. It might get thinner, but that overall shape is not going to change. Not for a long time, I think.
Gruber seems to think we're going to see a higher definition display.
That's different, likely. You can put a higher definition display in that same space.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that, especially after playing with the Nexus 1. But no, they're not going to make a different size.
Yeah, it is double the resolution. According to what John Gruber says about the iPhone 4G, it's going to be double the resolution, 960 by 640. That's double, right?
It's more. I can't remember if it's double, but definitely more.
Okay, definitely more.
And you heard about the Nexus One thing, that there's now some debate on the resolution of it because they use a different kind of like wonky technology.
They count in like base 10 or something, or base 4.
No, it's like
qubits.
Like,
duh.
Yeah.
Okay. They're measuring each pixel like one and a half times.
I was reading a piece that if you really nail it down to the real resolution, it is like 320 by something, because they use some sort of pixel technology where it's not a separate red, green, blue. Like, the blue and the red, I think, are half pixel, and then the green sticks out underneath them, something like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That just sounds like they did it for the sake of saying we have more pixels.
Well, and what they're saying is that the problem is that it creates kind of, some people, I guess, are complaining about some fuzziness on the text.
Yeah, I would imagine
it's not
so
crisp on the edges. And it's because that's how that technology works out. But supposedly they can tweak it somewhat in software. So I guess there's other phones that have displays that aren't as soft as the Nexus One that are using the same technology. So I don't know.
Well, Jeff,
just something interesting I ran across the other day as I was doing some research.
Jeff, have you noticed fuzzy text on your Nexus One?
Well, it has kind of a little bit of a fuzz at the edge, but it's, I mean, I know how anti-aliasing works, and that's what it looks like to me.
Oh, okay.
Just like the natural smoothing that you would get from anti-aliasing, and it doesn't look bad at all. The Nexus One screen just looks beautiful. That's all there is to it. And I don't care where the pixels are laying or what the real density is. It's a really nice-looking screen.
Yeah, I would love to look at one. I'm supposed to be getting one because right now John Gruber is borrowing one from another guy. I won't mention the other guy because I just want to make fun of John Gruber right now. But he's been, he borrowed it from this guy and borrowed it several months ago and was supposedly done with it. And I was actually supposed to get it from him at Macworld to play with and then help this guy sell it because he decided he's not going to use it. But John Gruber has still not sent me a Nexus One. So Gruber,
he's not going to send it to you.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping to get some kind of like his blogging essence maybe rubbed off on the Nexus One.
So here's the details. It's called a pen tile matrix.
Ooh.
And the info's over on Ars Technica.
Of course it is.
Yep. They do great stuff at Ars Technica.
They do.
Yeah, and they kind of show it. So, you know, basically they're just saying the effect of resolution is lower than what Google says. But they do point out, as Jeff, you're mentioning, it all comes down to what does it look like? It really doesn't matter what the underlying technology is. It's what's the perception when you're using it. That's ultimately more important.
Right.
So you can get into the mathematics and the techniques of it, but if it looks better to you, then it looks better to you. And I think this partly came up because some people are saying that the screens on the AT&T version of the Nexus One are not as good as the original one. I guess some of them are coming across with a kind of a red cast.
Because the network sucks.
I have no idea why that is. But
so the Nexus One that I had was on T-Mobile, which I don't think has any bearing on it. What I'm wondering is if people are seeing the color shift that I was experiencing when you're dealing with the cameras that's built into it. Everything had a red shift to it.
No, this was actually on the screen, and I guess it's a lack of richness in the blacks. So they didn't know if they were maybe tweaked differently on AT&T, like just the internal settings for some reason. I don't know why they would be different, but at similar brightnesses, it was, you know, purples were looking not like deep purple. They were looking like more of a maroon color. And I guess a lot of the interface of the Android operating system uses this kind of deep purple color. And they said they didn't really notice it till it was like they were outside at night. And then you could tell that the blacks weren't as deep a black. So there just wasn't as much contrast, it sounded like.
It wasn't dark as night.
I could understand why they wouldn't notice it during the day, because if you take a Nexus One outside into the sunlight, you can't see the screen at all. It just goes black.
Oh, really? That's not good.
Yeah.
Is that because of the OLED?
That's my assumption.
Mm. Huh.
But even sitting in my car, I was not driving, just so you know, but sitting in my car with the sunlight coming in the car, I typically couldn't see the screen at all. But if I, you know, with my iPhone sitting right beside it, so I could do a side-by-side comparison, even though it would be dark and sometimes hard to read, I could still see what was on my iPhone screen.
Yeah. Okay, so jumping back to the iPhone 4G rumors, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the 4G, the next generation iPhone, will likely have a CDMA counterpart. And work on Verizon and Sprint. And that's just, you know, one of those rumors that's always out there. Gruber's also complaining, or not complaining, what was the word that I'm looking for? Claiming that the 4G will have an A4 CPU, like the iPad, a front-facing camera, multitasking, and according to Engadget, we'll see it on the 22nd of June, and it will be named iPhone HD.
Okay, do you want my list of what I think's wrong with all that?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so I think Apple is very likely working on a CDMA iPhone. However, I do not think that it will be on Verizon. I think that they're making it for the Chinese market and that it will be just the proprietary CDMA that China developed. So, and that makes sense, because if you're going to make a specialized phone like that, why not make it for the biggest fracking market you can find? And that would be China. So I think that's where that's going to go. As far as front-facing camera goes, I just don't see it happening. And I give you the exact same reasoning I gave with the iPad. Hold that thing in front of your face and try and hold it still enough so that you're not going to make whoever's on the other end of your voice call barf.
Yeah. Oh, but they could, you know, add some anti-shake stuff. You know, they do that with camcorders.
They could, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do the front-facing camera.
How many smartphones out there right now have front-facing cameras, and is that a real selling feature for a lot of those devices?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be curious to do the research on that. On the CDMA thing, I somewhat agree with Jeff, because the other thing that I'm thinking about is the longer and longer Apple waits to get the iPhone on Verizon, the less and less sense it makes for them to do a CDMA version when we know Verizon is switching over to LTE.
Right.
So, I mean, if they're not going to have it out till the end of the year, Verizon's already doing their rollout of LTE in 2011. So what would be the point of having a CDMA phone that you have to develop that you sell for 1 year and then dump?
That's a good point. You know, and I think Apple likes their exclusive deal with AT&T.
It certainly appears that way.
Yeah, even though we hear people complain about the whole thing and they want to have choice, I think for Apple this is working out really, really well.
Yeah, and Verizon is, as from everything I've ever read about Apple's negotiations with Verizon, it's never gone well, and they just don't get along, period. And Apple and AT&T do get along.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, Verizon has their own idea about how the cell phone market works. And their idea is do everything our way and let us change how your whole interface works. Let us lock down all the features that you have to pay extra, but we'll give you better coverage overall.
Right.
And we know Apple is not in that game where they're going to let someone else dictate the phone features and the phone interface.
Yeah. You know what is believable about that list to me? The A4 CPU. I think that's a no-brainer. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Or some variant of it. Maybe it's not the same one that's in the iPad, but definitely custom silicon from Apple. And it's got to be running at a gigahertz or faster.
And more memory and multitasking. That's what I like.
Yeah. Well, multitasking comes with the OS, but yeah, more memory, faster processor, custom processor, higher resolution display.
Lightsaber.
Yep. Oh, well, duh.
That goes without saying.
Right, and yet you said it.
Yeah, mistake. Anyway, okay, so moving on. Remember, like, last month when we saw a little pull down in the back-end developer app store submission screen, iTunes Connect, I think it's called, where you can choose categories and stuff. There was an explicit category, and it quickly disappeared. This is right after they started banning all of these explicit apps, the booby apps.
Yeah.
Yep. And MacStories.net just several days ago found some pages in the iTunes store. One said top explicit paid software, and one said top explicit iPad software.
Interesting.
Which leads me to believe, and everybody else on the internet to believe, that we'll be seeing the explicit apps make a comeback on the App Store in an explicit category. And
yeah, but nobody will want to go there.
No, yeah, who likes explicit stuff?
they're still gonna have to sort out that whole if it has a web browser, it's explicit.
Yeah,
thing,
so right? So like Tweety will be in the explicit store,
and
OmniFocus, because you can get to web pages from it. And I'm sure Ken hates me for continuously bringing that part up. Because people at Apple definitely listen.
I hope it is real, and I hope they, because they have to build out this special section and they're thinking about it now, that they think about it intelligently and you know, we don't wind up with anything that has an integrated Safari web browser in it being in the explicit store, because I think that's just going to add to mass confusion among
consumer. Filter apps, just say, has web browser, select all, move. and then it's explicit.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Now, the sad thing is, Michael, now that you've said that, someone at Apple will hear this and go, oh, yeah.
We do have that thing where you can just select all. That's cool.
And that means this is all your fault.
It's all your fault.
I'm prepared to take responsibility for that. I don't give out my home address.
I do.
You give out my home address.
I give out your home address.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
By the way, your mom's really pissed at me, I think.
Yeah.
And I think we need to call that event the Great App Boob Purge of 2010.
Oh.
The Great Boob App Purge of 2010.
Yes.
I think we have a...
It will go down in history books. Children will read about it.
The breast culling of 2010.
Ooh, even better. All right.
Okay. The breast culling of 2010. Okay. Anyway, I just said, you know, show title. Anyway. Moving on. We have a sponsor.
It's kind of scary that things that just randomly come out of my head end up becoming the show titles.
They just, yeah. So you shouldn't be saying things that I can write down. You should be speaking in a different language, maybe.
So are you, you're going to do the sponsor thing?
Yeah. So we have a sponsor this.
Well, I got to do the tease thing now.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about, after the ad, let's talk about what I've deemed on my show the great Flash War of 2010.
Okay. That sounds good.
There's been some great battles.
That sounds incredibly engaging and totally worth continuing to listen to the podcast.
So after the break, the great Flash War of 2010.
Yes. Okay. And our sponsor this week on the iPhone Alley podcast is, of course, Citrix with GoToAssist Express. And it's awesome. I just like to preface with it's awesome because it really is. You can go to GoToAssist.com/Alley. You can try it free for 30 days. You have to put your credit card in there and tell it that you want to continue paying. But if you don't want to continue paying, you can actually remove your credit card from the system and just use the 30 days and try it out. No risk. So let me tell you what GoToAssist is. GoToAssist Express is the easiest way to help friends and family and anyone else. If you're a support professional, you need to help someone out, you need to get at their screen and fix something or see what someone's talking about, GoToAssist Express is what you want. So if you've ever been on the phone with someone and they say, hey, I have a problem with my computer, I want you to help me with it. The most aggravating thing of all, at least in my experience, is the part where you say, click this. Okay, click this. Okay, are you there? Are you there? Click this. That's boring. It's hard to do. And it takes a lot of patience. So what you want to use is GoToAssist Express, because all you have to do is open an application on your computer, say, go to this URL, type in this code, and then in a matter of like a minute, you can see their screen, you can control the screen, you can send them messages, you can send them files, you can see all the applications that are running on the computer, you can see everything that's installed, you can see the full hardware configuration, and like I said, you can take control of the screen, you can do the stuff for them. Something that would take maybe 20 minutes on the phone that you know exactly how to do will take 30 seconds because you can see their screen and do it for them. And you can walk them through whatever you want to do. It's 128-bit SSL encryption, it's very secure. And you can do up to 8 sessions. So if you're a support professional and you're helping out a lot of people at once and you're doing maybe a software update on one computer, you can switch over to another, help them out, jump back. It's really cool. You can try it free for 30 days at GoToAssist.com/Alley. And that supports the blank, blank, blank podcast that you're currently listening to. The blank, blank, blank podcast that you're currently listening to, because I need to enunciate. GoToAssist.com/Alley. Do it. It's awesome. I love it. Moving on. Adam, yep. You had a topic.
The great Flash War of 2010.
Yes.
Waged by Apple against Adobe. And frankly, I have to think this week that Apple's winning a bit. Because, you know, we saw the thing from CBS.
Yep.
Supposedly they're prepping HTML5 video content for their TV shows. I think they actually, CBS already supports the iPhone on the mobile version of their website with QuickTime, but it's just another thing. And then we also saw the whole Bright Cove announcement.
Yep,
they're doing HTML5.
That's the provider for New York Times.
As well as a bunch of other people.
Yep.
Although, I have to say, I tried it out. They had a little demo on their website.
It didn't work.
It wasn't working for me.
HTML5 does not work.
So it may be a bit premature, but I think as far as the Flash War of 2010 goes, I think what we're seeing happen is big content creators are looking at devices like the iPhone and the iPad, and they're actually adjusting their technologies or changing their websites away from Flash. And I think that's exactly what Apple is going after.
Yeah, and I support that. I think it's a good thing. As much as I would like to see Flash on the iPad, the only reason I want to see Flash on the iPad is because there are sites like Hulu and Mega Video and some others that have a lot of illegal content and porn that I just need to have on my iPad. So I'm not going to be getting it until they support Flash or porn. But yeah, I think it's fantastic because I really don't like Flash. And because it's a big resource hog, it takes up a lot of memory and generally pegs my CPU at 100%, and it's lame.
I've come out on my show and I don't like Flash either, but I mainly don't like Flash because I think it's an overused technology, and it's used oftentimes when it doesn't need to be used.
Yep.
And then because it has its issues with taking up resources, it's really annoying that Flash has to be used to do, you know, to animate a banner ad through three static images. It's
yeah.
like, why is that thing in Flash?
Tangent.
We had GIF animations, or there's other ways to do that. You can do some little JavaScript.
I have a tangent for that.
Yeah.
On the ads thing, there's actually a service. I just saw an email, a press release on a particular service that's just recently been rolled out to convert on the fly Flash banner ads. So if you have ads that you put out in Flash form, these guys mm-hmm. will like change it to, I don't know, an animated GIF or something for the iPad.
Probably not an animated GIF because they look horrible, which is why I think Flash won out when we started getting animated banners, because you could do really nice looking ones that didn't look like garbage because you had to compress them down so much with something like GIF. But yeah, I mean, you can have static PNGs or JPEGs, probably PNGs, controlled with a little simple JavaScript, and boom, you're done.
That is
no
true.
Flash.
You can even do CSS animations if you want to get fancy.
Yeah. So I think there's just new technologies that have made it so Flash isn't required in a lot of cases. And I think moving away and building websites that are more efficient and load more quickly and are more standardized is generally a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. The one interesting thing, did you see that Google is now including Flash with Chrome?
They weren't before?
No. Well, you can use the Flash plugin that you have on your computer, but now they're bundling the plugin. As far as I've seen,
every other browser on the planet, including Safari, does. So
Safari actually bundles. Well, I believe so.
I don't remember having to download it the first time.
Well,
it's
included with the operating system. I think it's a separate piece. But as far as I know, Jeff, do you know anything about that?
I'm not sure. Actually, I think Flash is bundled with Safari, which I'm wondering how long that will continue to be the case. Do you remember it used to be that stuff at Expander was bundled with the operating system, and then
right.
all of a sudden it wasn't?
Right.
So at what point does Apple stop including that? And my guess is that they will continue to include Flash for a while. But I believe it's included as part of the Safari bundle and not part of the operating system bundle.
Yeah. Flash became that one plugin. You know, way back in the day, every browser had plugins, and we had a million plugins, and you had plugins for doing anything that was beyond rendering straight HTML. But as the HTML spec became more sophisticated and we got CSS and JavaScript and more standardized technologies, a lot of those things went away. And Flash was kind of like that one last thing. And everybody just bundled it because it was used so many places on the web. And the thing is, just with these websites making these changes this week and sort of Apple declaring war on Flash, I think we might be getting to the point, like you're saying, Jeff, within a few years where, you know what, not as many websites having Flash. You know, Adobe claims something like 80% of the top websites. Well, when that starts dropping down to 60% or 50% or 40%, I think that's when you might see that happen, where it's just not bundled in. It's an option because you don't need it for the majority of the sites on the net.
So what you're saying is you believe that in a matter of a couple years that Flash will go the way of the animated fireworks and and torches and stuff.
Potentially, yeah. I think especially as HTML5 takes off and you can do CSS animations and things like that. I mean, a lot of the things that Flash is used for on the web is simply doing animations and playing video. And when you don't need Flash to do those two things anymore, it doesn't make sense unless Adobe's going to take time and spend the time to make Flash more relevant. But they haven't really changed it much. I know they're saying everything's going to change with 10.1, but I'm even reading with 10.1 on mobile devices like the Nexus One and stuff like that, it still doesn't render all the Flash that's out there. and maybe Jeff, I don't know if you've played around with Flash on the Nexus One, but
no, actually, I didn't, and it's because I was actually having issues with the way the web browser works on the Nexus One. It actually started to annoy me after a while. So I was hitting very specific sites to test very specific things and then hopping over to my iPhone for the rest of my web browsing.
Hmm.
So, but as far as how long it will be before you don't see Flash as the big player, I think it's going to be a long time. And a lot of that goes back to the fact that Adobe did a fantastic job of convincing people that they really needed to know Flash and how to use Flash. So good for Adobe for knowing how to market the product. The bad part of that was that Adobe, I think unintentionally actually, created a situation where they were telling people, do everything with Flash. And then people started to do that. And that wasn't the right message to send out because Flash isn't the perfect tool for everything on the web. And it ended up becoming a thing where people were using that to do everything because that was the tool they knew. And so we have just millions of people out there that are doing all of this website coding using Flash because that's the tool they know. And trying to do this whole-scale conversion of all of these people that have so much time and training invested in using Flash, okay, we're not going to be able to transition away from Flash nearly as quickly as people would like us to think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there were some things pointed out with Flash on a device like the Nexus One. I mean, Flash, the new player, has support for multi-touch, but guess what? The Flash apps that are already out there on websites need to be rewritten to support it. Adobe makes a big deal about how many Flash games are available, and if you don't have Flash on your phone, well, guess what? You can't play Flash games. Well, guess what? A lot of the Flash games use keyboard input. Well, if you have a touchscreen device, how are you going to do keyboard input? So,
and how are you going to do a rollover?
Exactly. You don't have state. Exactly. So a lot of them use mouse control. Well, how do you know exactly that this is a mouse movement that's happening when it's a touch movement? And if it's not programmed for the touch support, then so the Flash still has to be rewritten. It has to be done. So even Flash isn't perfect. And if you don't need it, if you don't need those technologies and it's supported by other things out of the box, then I don't see the advantage to continue to use it.
I agree. I don't like Flash. Okay, so moving on.
There was our Flash bashing for the week, I guess.
Yeah. It'll continue, of course. But the Apple has released guided tour videos for the iPad, and they all look really sweet. And there's an entire, just a full-length, all-inclusive guided tour, so you can check out all the applications, most of the applications that are included with the iPad. It gives you a little rundown of how they work, and several neat little things have come out of that, little features that I didn't know about. There's actually a dictionary included in the iPad.
Hey!
Not an actual...
Can they put it on my iPhone, please?
Maybe. You know, I think it's... it might be a question of space.
Yeah.
It might also be a question of feature differentiation.
That's true, but I think it might be more of a space thing, and there isn't, as far as I can tell, there wasn't a dictionary application. It's just sort of available to apps if they deal with text. So if you if you're in the iBooks application, for example, you can tap on a word and pull up a definition. And you can also, it also does spell check, which is different from the auto correction.
I want that
thing
on my iPhone too.
Yeah, which is cool. GeoHot. George Hotz, the guy who did the original iPhone unlock, has mentioned that he thinks his untethered jailbreak might work with the iPad, which would totally rock.
Okay, so I saw that article. I saw the video. I don't jailbreak, so I don't know much about it. So I was waiting for you to bring this one up because I want to ask you. I'm assuming you saw the video.
Yep.
Can you explain to me what an untethered jailbreak is?
Absolutely, I can.
Yeah.
So the older model iPhones and iPod Touches allowed, with the current exploits that the dev team knows about, allowed you to jailbreak the phone and do whatever you want with it, and you could reboot as many times as you want. There was no, the jailbreak didn't break anything on the phone. With newer versions, they have new, I believe they're boot ROMs. So you can't really change the boot ROMs as far as I know. You just have to work with them or around them. And right now, if you have a late model iPod Touch or a late model iPhone 3GS, I believe, you cannot jailbreak your those devices. And
jailbreaking is not permanent on those devices.
No, jailbreaking is permanent until you restore, of course. But if you reboot those devices, it will see the jailbreak as a problem with the operating system, and it'll kick you into restore mode. So you can't reboot your device. And the only way to reboot it is if you have one of the jailbreaking applications running on your computer, because those are aware of that fact, and it'll send just whatever signal to the iPhone or iPod Touch saying, no, it's cool, keep booting up, keep, you know, continue with the boot sequence.
But it has to be tethered to get past that reset.
Exactly. That's why it's called tethered. Tethered boot.
Now I understand the video, because the video he shows rebooting the iPhone.
Just a guy rebooting an iPhone.
Yeah. All makes sense now.
Yeah.
They didn't really explain it in the article that I read.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of people explaining it.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So that's cool. I hope that we can get a jailbreak on the iPad. Of course, that'll require us to make, and by us, I mean the people who are developers, to create new versions of Backgrounder and all that stuff. But, you know, every time there's a new version of the iPhone OS, it gets quicker and quicker for these guys to update their tools and that sort of stuff. So multitasking on the iPad will be fun, hopefully. And
sweet.
Yes,
I just said sweet.
Oh, sounded like something else, and I don't know what. It just sounded like a noise. It just sounded like
multitasking
a noise.
on the iPhone, multitasking on the iPad, jailbreaking. We just can do everything.
Yeah, the Gold Master version of the iPhone SDK is out. The 3.2 SDK is out.
Note: after your app had to be submitted to the.
Excellent point.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, so everyone that wanted to have their apps available on April 3rd had to submit them based on builds from beta of the iPhone SDK.
Yeah, but I'm sure they'll be able to push out an update pretty quickly if there are any issues.
Well, yeah, supposedly Apple's hiring a bunch more people to in the team.
I sure hope so.
So, What'd we dub the guy that works there in the approval store?
Oh, was that Vinny?
Yeah, Vinny. Yep.
So he's getting a coworker.
Yeah, I got this other guy with me. He's helping me check out all these apps.
I assumed it was just like a Clone Wars situation where they're just making a whole bunch of Vinnies, like Boba Fett. It's just they're just cloning him.
Now, Jango Fett was the clone. Boba was his son.
Oh, well, fine. Who cares? But this isn't Star Wars Weekly.
I saved you from all kinds of flame emails.
Yeah, yep.
That I would delete and ignore.
Yeah. And now I'm going to get 3 emails from people that either explain to me what a sad little man I am, or which part of Star Wars canon I just messed up.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to your emails.
Adam, was there something else you were going to say?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just
good.
The serious side of that thing is that as far as we haven't talked about this in a while, the whole approval process, but I think we haven't talked about it in a while because I think it honestly has gotten better. I mean, we kind of heard that developers were getting their updates pushed very, very quickly, and Apple seems to somehow have resolved that beyond the purging that has been going on and the general denying apps for no reason. Or what appears to be no reason.
Yeah, that problem. Still that, seems
that
to be
still
around.
Exists. But the overall, if once you're in the store and you're working with Apple, it seems like everything's been sort of hunky dory. At least we haven't heard any major outcries from the developer community of late.
Yeah. Oh, also one really cool note that was mentioned in Apple Insider's piece about the iPhone OS 4.0, and also mentioned by Steve Jobs himself, actually, there will be a universal inbox on the iPhone OS starting in 4.0. Steve Jobs didn't mention that it would be in 4.0. He just said that, yes, it'll be there.
Yep.
But the article from Apple Insider did mention that it was going to be a 4.0 feature.
Now, how would they know? If Steve didn't say, how do they know?
How do they know? They
It's
a different source.
It's the whole, Steve Jobs has been answering all these emails, supposedly.
Yeah.
But somebody sent him and said, will it have, or when are you going to do a universal inbox? Is that what they call it? Universal inbox?
Yeah. Or universal mailbox, whatever.
And he just did his typical terse reply, which is like something yes, like something. It'll be in there. I'm probably misquoting it, but that was the gist of it.
Right. I think that's good. Yep. Something that Bill Palmer has mentioned several times that he's wanted to see. And I would like to see that too, even though I'm probably going to stick with using gmail.com or google.com/whatever, because I'm a Gmail user and I don't use mail.
So in the iPad guided tour, I didn't watch the mail one. Does the iPad not have a universal inbox?
It does not. It still has the same setup that the iPhone has.
But there are interface changes that make it much easier to work with email on the iPad.
Yeah.
Simply because you have a lot more real estate to work with.
Yeah. It's a real estate thing for sure. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yep. Okay. So I think we need to move on, get out of this, end this episode, but we have iPhone picks to do before we wrap it up. So Adam, would you like to go first with that iPhone pick?
Yeah, and I'm gonna be cruel with mine. Well, maybe cruel. I don't know. So I use, let's see, all of these location service apps: Brightkite, been a user for a long time. Gowalla, Foursquare. You guys use all of these?
Sorry,
go ahead.
I use Foursquare.
You use Foursquare now? Yeah. So I've been playing around with them, and the number one problem is that you go to a place and you've got to launch three apps.
Oh yeah, I know what you want. I know what app you're going to pick. I know which app you're going to pick.
Yeah, I'm going to pick a web app. And I just got my invite today. It's beta, and it's from the guys at Brightkite, and it's called check.in. And it will check you in to Foursquare, Brightkite, and Gowalla is beta, so it's not quite working, I don't think, but it will supposedly, when they get it up and running, check you into all of those all at once from a web app. And I tried it out today because I got my invite, and it worked great. Again, except for Gowalla. I couldn't find the Gowalla location. But I think mainly because it wasn't in the Gowalla database yet. So I think if I went into Gowalla and added it, it might have found that location. But check me into Foursquare, check me into Brightkite, all with a single click. It was awesome.
Cool.
So it solves that problem.
So check.in.
And you can sign up. They have an email sign up. I don't know how long they're taking to add people to the beta, but anybody can go request to be added.
Do you have invites that you can give out?
No, there is no web interface. So like if you go to the website on your computer, you're just going to get the sign up form. You actually have to go on your iPhone to access the actual app, and you need to have an invite before that, and there is no, they're not giving out invites, and I haven't gotten one in my email box. But if I do, I will certainly let everybody know. But I think I signed up like a week ago to be in the beta, so it took about a week to get in. So I don't know if that's typical for everybody. I don't know if they just opened it up today or what the deal is, but sign up. It can't hurt. It's free.
Yeah. I think these are Martin May and Brady Becker. These are the guys who do Brightkite, right?
At least one of the guys is one of the developers from Brightkite, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So check.in.
Yeah, and so it solves that problem. I can just do one click, and I added the little icon to my home screen, so you really can't tell the difference between the web app and standalone app. And I don't know if they plan to bring out a standalone app at some point, but it's a web app for
right
now. Is it
one of those apps that, or web apps that you can save to your home screen and it doesn't open in Safari, it opens in like a little web view thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it opens in Safari, but it's the full screen. You don't see the Safari toolbars and all that stuff. That's what you're talking about.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's check.in.
Yep. Okay, Jeff, do you have an iPhone pick this week?
Sorry, yes, I do.
Well, before he does that, I gotta say the other cool thing about check.in. There's one thing I forgot to mention, and I just because I pulled up the website. So the tagline: one check-in to rule them all. I screwed it up. Let me try that again. One check-in to rule them all.
That's very cool.
Yes.
So sorry about being a little slow to respond. I was drawing a chicken wearing Batman costume. I have no idea why.
That's okay. If our listeners haven't been checking out the show notes as of late for the last few shows, Jeff has been drawing chickens for some weird reason.
I have no idea why.
And he's been sending them to me after the show, and so I've been putting them in the show notes. So we'll probably see this chicken Batman thing happen in this week's show notes too. And you can get that from iPhoneLA.com/podcast. Click on the episode and you will see the show notes, which includes the links that we
maybe we have chickens
and the chickens.
Maybe we have a show name, iPhone Chicken.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. No. I guess because I have a fondness for, you guys know IP Chicken.
I've heard of it. I don't know what that is.
It's just a website to show you your IP address. I think it might have even been set up by Alex Albrecht from Dig Nation.
Okay.
Not entirely positive, but yeah, it's called IP Chicken. So just made me think of IP, iPhone Chicken.
Yeah.
Don't know why.
Okay. Jeff, do you have an iPhone pick?
I do. I'm actually torn. I have two apps, and I'm trying to decide which one to do. Should I do the fun or the functional?
I want the functional one.
You want functional?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Reader 2.0. It's an RSS application, and I've been a Net Newswire user on my iPhone for quite a while, and I decided to try out Reader 2.0. And it is so much faster, and the interface is really nice. So, and it's not very expensive. It's like a couple dollars.
And it's called, what's the company that does it?
I have no idea, but it's Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R.
Oh, it's spelled incorrectly. Got it.
Wait, so the one question I have about it, and this has been my dilemma ever since NewsGator got rid of, I don't know what happened. They got rid of the NewsGator sync service and they went with Google.
Right.
And there used to be this great feature of NetNewsWire called the clippings folder, and that would sync through the NewsGator service. Mm-hmm. That has gone completely away since they went to Google for doing the syncing. So I had a clippings folder that I could throw stuff into that I wanted to kind of set aside. So now I have to do the whole starred thing, or I'm trying to use the Instapaper, which works pretty well, and then kind of sync that back. But I have not been happy with the whole Google Reader sync thing. So you know, does it have any features for like syncing or saving off certain feeds or certain articles from different feeds? So that's what I need. I need a way to like separate out, okay, these are the things that because I use my RSS reader to gather information for my show, but a lot of times I don't have time to read the article right then and there. So that's where Instapaper's been kind of the good workaround for this. But it used to be I could just throw stuff into clippings on my iPhone, and then when I got back to my Mac, hey, there's all the articles that I went through, and now I can actually read them and drill down into them. But standing in line, I could quickly go through all my feeds and go, okay, this article, and just kind of shovel them off.
You know, I don't think it does that, but I'm not completely sure because I use Instapaper to throw all of those articles that I want to look at later.
Yeah, that's what I'm using now, and that works. It was nice having it all kind of in one app and not having to go to like different places and being able to sort of manage it all in NetNewsWire. And I really have missed that feature ever since they switched over. So I used to be a huge NetNewsWire fan, and now I'm just a pseudo NetNewsWire fan.
Yeah, that, you know, on my Mac, I use NetNewsWire because, well, it's about all we really have if you need to manage a lot of RSS feeds.
Right.
But I'm not married to it. And, you know, I've been using it or was using it on my iPhone simply because it worked and I was okay with it. But now that I'm playing with Reader, I like this a lot more. And as far as the star thing goes, uh-huh. That's actually really easy to do because all you have to do is slide an article when you're looking in the list view. And as you slide it left or right, you can choose to tag it as read or unread or as a starred article.
Ooh, so it's like it does the Tweety thing.
Yeah, yep. It's kind of like that, yeah.
Cool. So it looks pretty too.
Does it sync with Google
Reader? Yes, it does.
Oh, so then that's how you're syncing your articles back and forth to NetNewsWire on the desktop?
Right.
Yeah. So that works well. I mean, that works okay. So that way if I read something on my iPhone when I get back to my Mac, NetNewsWire knows that it's already read. It's already been marked as read and I'm not, you know, doubling up. But it's more the archiving of certain articles that I want to get to later or want to read in more detail that I've been struggling with.
Yeah. I don't think there's a perfect solution yet, but at least for me.
There was.
There was. And they took it away. It's ridiculous. So, but if we didn't have Instapaper, I would be completely screwed.
Instapaper is the best.
Yes, it's an awesome.
You know what? I'm going to do my other app anyhow.
So, no. Okay.
Oh,
so, you have to.
I totally have to.
Let me just mention the name of your pick again. It's Reader, spelled R-E-E-D-E-R, Reader, and it's $3.
Oh, $3. Okay. Totally worth it.
Yep.
All right. So my other one is the Dr. Horrible comic that came out for the iPhone. And are you familiar with Dr. Horrible at all?
Yes.
Yes.
Love it.
Okay, so what Dark Horse did was put together a Dr. Horrible comic, and it shows like the origin of Dr. Horrible and the first time Dr. Horrible and Captain Hammer meet. It even has Penny in it and Dark Horse and Moist, and it's just a wonderfully fun little story, and they did this specifically for the iPhone. I guess I'm assuming that you can go into a comic book store and buy the print version of this as well, but it's just a wonderfully fun little comic. It's 99 cents, and it's great. Just go spend the 99 cents and buy it.
Cool. Just search for Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
Okay. So my pick is Delivery Status Touch, and I'm surprised that we haven't already done this. I'm pretty sure we have not, but it is so cool. And I'm using it recently because I ordered some stuff off of eBay and I also ordered a bunch of iPads. So I'm using it to track all that stuff. And if you are a longtime Mac user, you may remember the deliveries widget by the same company.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by JuneCloud. So they've had this widget for like ever and it looks really nice. And the great thing about this application, well, let me tell you about the app first. The app allows you to track packages from FedEx, UPS. Here, let me pull up a list of all this because it's all inclusive. Adobe, Amazon, Apple, Canada Post, DHL, FedEx, Google Checkout. I'm skipping over a lot of stuff. UPS, and other, whatever other is. But there are a lot of things, like I said, so the standard shipping companies, USPS, all that, as well as Amazon, Apple, and several other companies. You can just, if you have an Apple shipment, for example, you just say, add shipment from Apple, and then you just enter in your email address and zip code, and it pulls it up, it finds it, and then you can track that. It says, you know, I have one day on this iPad. It tells me what the iPad, it says iPad Wi-Fi 16 gigabyte origin scan Shenzhen, China, and you can tap on it, get more details, see when it was updated, get the order number, and really cool, you can say view on map and it'll show you a little pin of where the package is right now. And it'll also show you your current location. So it shows it relative to your current location, which is super cool. and you can share it. So you tap share this delivery, and it sends a very nicely formatted, very pretty email to whoever you want to send it to. You can view the details online right within the application. And so back to the awesomeness, if you have a Mac, this widget is free. So you can integrate it with the widget. So if you have the widget, drop it in your dashboard, and whatever shipments you put into the widget, it will sync into the application on your phone and back and forth. Because, well, you actually have to sign in to the service online, of course, but it's a free account. You can even manage this stuff online. So you can go to the website. I think it's like junecloud.com junecloud.com. And you can manage all of your deliveries from there. Remove, rearrange, all that stuff. It's really cool. And if you're looking for an application to track packages, this is the app to have. There's no other app. Delivery Status Touch. That is my full endorsement. I love it. It's super
nice.
Cool.
And they're doing an iPad version too.
Are there screenshots out from that?
Yes, on the website. Is it kind of pseudo screenshots? You get a sneaky peek.
Sneaky peek.
Yeah, they're clipped off, but they're doing an iPad version for sure.
I don't see it, but I'm sure it'll look
right up at the top.
Really,
if you
cool.
go to their website, very first item under Journal, Delivery Status for iPad updated.
Ooh. Cool. Yeah, that looks good. I'm going to say that I think most of the iPad applications are going to look pretty decent. I don't think we're going to have this issue with a bunch of retards making iPad apps.
My one question is, I'm going to be very curious to see how many developers go the universal route and let me just upgrade my iPhone app that I already paid for.
Or do like an HD version.
Or versus do a whole separate version that I have to pay again for.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. iPad Day is in, what, 4 days, 3 days? It's on Saturday. We're recording this on Wednesday. So we will have been fully engrossed and covered in the iPad madness by the time we record again next week.
Except I will have to wait, which is just going to frustrate me to no end, but that's okay.
Why do you have to wait? You're not allowed to open it?
Because I'm getting the 3G version.
Oh, yeah. Me too. But I'm going to play with some at the Apple Store.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just can't afford, I can't afford to have two.
Buy one right away and then buy one later?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not practical. I completely
Although
agree
I have a feeling you're going to be able to sell them in a month for probably a pretty good price, because I'm guessing in a month there's going to be a little lull shortage, potentially. At least in some areas. I have a feeling it's going to be the sort of thing where you can get it some places and not other places.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. All right. So wrapping things up, you can the action item for this week is, if you have a podcast, if you have a name for the show that you want to suggest or ideas for anything like that, send those suggestions to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. We'll look at that. And it'll help us out in figuring out what we're going to name the podcast. And you can check out our sponsor. Go to Assist Express. It's awesome. You can try it free for 30 days. Go to assist.com/Alley, and that supports the podcast. And we thank them for their support. You can find our iPhone picks and show notes at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And you can send feedback, like I said, to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. You can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and twitter.com/jgamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. It's always fun.
And thank you for being here, Adam Christensen, at the MacCast, maccast.com.
Yep. Thank you.
And twitter.com/maccast. And you can find me at twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, but, you know, I poop jokes. Just fair warning. Not a lot of iPhone stuff.
And he won't follow you back.
Nope.
I've heard that about you.
Yep.
Man, what a dick.
I'm a hateful person.
Follow iPhone Alley.
Yeah, you can do that. Twitter.com/iPhone Alley. With that, another iPhone blank blank podcast is out the door. And done.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone.
Have you considered asking 5-year-olds what they think the show should be named?
Poopy Cast?
Yeah, you might get some great ideas. I mean, yeah, it might be Michael's Poop Cast.
I hope it's Michael's Poop Cast.
Mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.